Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio, dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But you can stream anytime, anywhere if you're away from the radio dial by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can also listen on demand. Dennis Fuller producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company, as he is each and every Tuesday and Friday on the program, is, of course, the host of VSiN Primetime, airing on weeknights from 5 until 8 p.m. Central. You can hear him on VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast, College Basketball Betting Podcast, which will be firing up here pretty shortly. On Twitter, on X, at 1TimMurray. You can also download the VSiN app, listen live, and stream anytime, anywhere. Good day, sir.
It is a good day, my friend, and we are also, VSiN is back on Sirius XM, so looking forward to that. 158 is where you can
find. No longer 202?
We haven't been on in a while. Yeah. We've actually been off for 5 years.
When y'all did the DraftKings deal? Is that when?
No, prior to that, okay. We I think I teamed up with iHeart, and we left Sirius XM. So, yeah, excited to be back there, and excited for this weekend, man. It should be a fun weekend, and I know there's no correlation, but as Memphis fans saw last night, dogs were barking in college hoops, right? We saw three ranked teams play basketball games on the road, all as favorites, and all three lost. Michigan lost to Minnesota. The Zags lost in Corvallis. That was a lovely result for yours truly. And then, unfortunately, Memphis loses up in Temple. Indicative of what is to come this weekend? Dogs will be barking?
I know one dog that did not cover late last night in the West Coast Conference.
San Diego?
Nope. Hashtag fade the waves.
Oh, Pepperdine.
Oh, yeah. There were seven people at the game. I mean, obviously, with the fires, that's like but I mean, that would have been a dozens of people still filing in. San Francisco got us home.
The Dons.
The Dons, yes. Got us home to the window.
Nice, easy win. I'll say this. I love late night living in Vegas, late night hoops, and I was very much looking forward to that Oregon State-Gonzaga game. That was a fun one, man. Once we got to overtime, I thought the sweat was on for anyone who had the points with the Beavs, but they got the outright win. But yeah, pretty. It was one of those nights, and I know that Memphis fans would not agree because they lost to Temple, but it was one of those nights where the card was pretty underwhelming, and the biggest NBA game was an absolute domination by the Oklahoma City Thunder over the Cleveland Cavaliers. But the Minnesota-Michigan game, followed by Northwestern Maryland and then Oregon State Gonzaga, it's actually really entertaining hoops last night. So getting you ready, baby, because college basketball's here.
Yeah, it's definitely here. And I've mentioned, I find myself, this is the week that I feel like I get back into college basketball the most. Like, it's not that I haven't been watching, but I've been very casually watching. Like, when you're up to your neck in football, it's really tough to like really lock in. But I have found myself kind of as we only have one college football game left. We're whittling it down to the divisional weekend in the NFL, and we're only going to have weekend games. I feel like this is – we're starting to like – and I think it also helps that like conference season's starting, and so you're seeing more good games. Like for Memphis, they have the reverse of what everyone else has in college basketball, where their non-conference portion is so paramount to their success, and then they get into conference play, and basically you're just trying to avoid awful losses. And fortunately for them last night, that Temple is – it's a quad two game, so even though they lose their first conference game, this is not – this, we're not talking about the Rice loss last year, where you're like, oh my God, that is just an absolute dumpster fire. But big weekend of sports. Want to start there. We'll tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. Blake Topmeyer going to join us 2:35. We'll talk national championship game with him. I also want to get his thoughts on yesterday. We had Heather Dinich at ESPN having a long form story about whether or not we would actually have changes to the playoff, whether or not he thinks that's feasible. We'll discuss all that and more with Blake when he joins us around 2:35. 3 o'clock, we'll get into the list. We will get into some of the news of the day, including Tom Brady's future. Also, I did not realize that Shedeur Sanders was in the Shrine Bowl.
Yeah.
I did not realize. I would have figured he would have for sure been in the Senior Bowl, but he's there. So wanted to discuss a little bit from that. Seth Hennigan gets a Senior Bowl invite, so that's great for him. Congratulations to him. And then because Eric yesterday wanted to get out with the boys and go hit the links in San Antonio. I can't believe it was warm enough to hit the links, but good for him. He's going to join us today, 3:30. Grizzlies tonight, it's an 8:30 tip on ESPN. Of course, you can hear pregame right here on 92.9 FM ESPN with Gary Darby at 8 p.m. Eric will have tip-off at 8:30. We'll talk everything Grizzlies with him at 3:30. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. So I think, Tim, I actually wanted to start with your latest Twitter poll.
Yes.
Which underdog, not including Buffalo, because right now, has it moved? Is it still one, or is it? Are there some one and a halves?
There's some one and a halves out there, but mainly one. It's kind of hovering around Buffalo, for those wondering, is a slight home dog right now to the Baltimore Ravens.
I believe the stat from ESPN Stats and Info, this is the first time in NFL playoff history that the Buffalo Bills are a home underdog.
Wow.
So,
I did not see that.
But to Tim's point, I mean, we're essentially talking about a toss-up. Yeah. So Tim's question was, which underdog, not including Buffalo, is the most live this weekend? For those wondering live, we're talking dog to win outright. Not dog to cover, dog to win outright. Texans plus 8.5 at Kansas City. Commanders plus 9.5 at Detroit. Rams plus 6 at Philly. Have I seen some 6.5s out there? Is that moving up?
Let me check for you. I had not seen it as of just a little while ago. There's a juice 6 minus 15, but nothing I've seen 6.5 yet.
Okay.
At least
looking at the board, I thought somebody said that earlier today. I was like, I thought if anything, it'd probably go the other direction. So they're sitting there at plus 6 or Notre Dame plus 8 against Ohio State. And the voting from the public was Rams 38.2%. That was the winner, if you will, not a
so far,
not a majority, but that is, and 272.
Plenty of time to still vote.
Still vote. I voted. I actually chose the winner, so that tells you where my square brain's thinking. Then we got.
Well, they are the shortest dog too.
Yeah, I think if Stafford plays like he did in the first half, I think they're live. The problem is,
sure.
I always feel like that team that plays on short rest never has a ton of success. And then the other problem that the Rams have had all year, they have not done well against mobile quarterbacks. And obviously Jalen Hurts is one of the most mobile quarterbacks. And then there's the real question for the Rams, which is, are they going to be able to block the Eagles? Because that Eagles defense in the second half of the season has been lights out, spectacular. But I do think I kind of like my biggest deal is of all these other underdogs that we're talking about, I struggle to see a way they win the game. I do not struggle to see a way that the Rams would win the game. I'd even say this. I think if I say close your eyes, can't you even see a way the Rams actually win the NFC?
I don't see that. I could see them winning on Sunday. The weather is a concern for me.
Yeah, snow.
Snow, cold. That is a decent concern for me when I'm looking at L.A. and Philly, because this was the one game that I was thinking about taking the Rams. I'll start with the Texans here.
All right.
So the Texans are 8.5-point dogs. These two teams played right before Christmas, right? They played on December 21st. The point spread in this game closed Kansas City 3. It is now 8.5. Now, Tank Dell obviously played in the game on December 21st, and he will not be playing for the Houston Texans, dealing with that knee injury, done for the year. That is a big movement, man. That's a big move from just a couple weeks ago, from Houston 3 to Houston 8.5. All being said, I do wonder. I've played a super, speaking of square, I played a very square teaser where I took the Kansas City Chiefs down to 2.5, and I took the Buffalo Bills up to 7.5. For those of you who have ever played a teaser, your goal is to get them through key numbers. So it's called a Wong teaser, which is you take a favorite of 7.5 to 8.5 down through 2 to 1, and then you do the opposite if you want to take an underdog, which, right, I did with the Buffalo Bills from 1.5 through the key of 3 and 7 up to 7.5. So that's the play that I made. But I do wonder if Kansas City is doing it again, if they're just getting their groove. Stella got her groove back. You know, they won and covered against Houston. They won and covered against Pittsburgh. The Denver game didn't matter. Now you're rested. You've got older players. Patrick Mahomes just had his third kid. Travis Kelce rested up because, you know, people forget, and I was talking about this morning on the morning show I do in Milwaukee, which was, you know, he's like, oh, Travis Kelce, long in the tooth, numbers down. I'm like, we did this last year. And then he had his, like, best postseason ever. So he's had now 2 weeks off. He's had LeBron James and Will Ferrell on his podcast. He's living the that life. I have a hard time envisioning Kansas City losing this game.
So I think the thing that's interesting also, we also got to remember this is, I assume the Swifties are coming back to football this week.
Oh yeah.
Okay. The other thing though about Kelce last year, it wasn't just what he did against the Bills, what he did against the Ravens, and what he did in the Super Bowl. If you think back to that Miami game, he looked a lot like he did in the season, which is he hurt? Is he old? I don't know. But then when he got into Buffalo, I don't know if he found the Michael Jordan secret sauce or what was the secret stuff from Space Jam. I don't know if he found the Russian hockey special. But he found something because he looked like a different person. I kind of think that that's what we're going to see again.
From Kelce?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see him having a...
The problem that I have in this game is the way that the Chiefs play, because like we really are, it is amazing how we really are just reliving the Patriots again. Their offense is largely dink and dunk. They play really good defense. They play one-score games, and they win them. The Chiefs are the only playoff. They had the worst record against the spread this year, 7-10. And as Tim mentioned, I think you have to throw out week 17. Beg your pardon. No.
Yeah, week 18.
Week 18.
Yeah, they got blown out by Denver when they didn't want the Bengals to make the playoffs.
I think they closed with 3 straight covers, but they are 7-10 against the number. That is the worst record against the spread of any playoff team. The next worst record against the spread was the Houston Texans.
The Houston Texans, the funny thing is, right, they were a team that had all this preseason hype.
They were like a dark horse Super Bowl talking team.
C.J. Stroud's going to win MVP. Texans could win the AFC. You know, if you're looking for, you know, as you mentioned, a long shot, dark horse, whatever, to win the Super Bowl, it was the Houston Texans. And because they are fortunate and play in the AFC South, they won that division, but they were incredibly underwhelming, and that's why last weekend, I ended up betting the Houston Texans because everybody and their mother was on the Chargers. Like, oh, the Chargers, Harbaugh, they're going to win this game. And Houston went out and they played really, really good. But look at
and their Herbert last played two, really, really bad.
Look at their last two games against the teams that are in the AFC playoffs. They got beat by the Chiefs, and then the following week, it was just an embarrassment when they played the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, they got hammered in that one. They could not do anything in that game. And, oh, by the way, Joe Mixon, how is he going to be effective at all in this game? He's, what, listed as questionable? So he'll probably play with that ankle injury, but how effective is Joe Mixon going to be? I had a text from a buddy of mine that I respect, and he said that he had taken some under 57.5 rushing yards for Joe Mixon because he anticipated him to be pretty limited in this game.
I think the other thing about this game is I think we will be quickly reminded the Chiefs are very boring, which is kind of counterintuitive, but it really is. Like, they do not play stylistically fun games.
Well, look at, you know, once again, to bring it back to gambling, Washington, Detroit, the total is 55.5.
In a dome.
Which is incredibly high for the NFL.
I believe ESPN put out, that is the highest point total in a playoff game.
I mean, that's insane. 55.5 is wild. But you look at Houston and Kansas City, the total's 41.5.
Right.
And you're looking at two touchdowns of a difference in the total. Because Kansas City, yes, they got Patrick Mahomes, they got Travis Kelce. Their defense is good, man. That's their calling card right now, that defense. And that's where I think they ultimately shine in this one against Houston.
I wanted to make sure. Also, other good information. This is from ESPN. Clay Martin will be the official, his regular season crew threw 59 flags for offensive holding, tied for the most in the NFL. The Chiefs were flagged the second most for holding penalties this year at 29. The Texans were at 14th with 22. I don't know. Like, I just feel like this is, because this is the early game on Saturday.
Of course it is.
I'm just totally like this. This is not the game that gets the juices flowing. And then when we turn to the nightcap, I think the other interesting thing for me is, are we going to see that Jaden Daniels is something different? Because otherwise, and I know these two teams are not the same, but man, I just get the same vibes from the Commanders right now that I did when the Giants knocked off the Vikings in Minnesota, and then they had to turn around and go play the Eagles, the one seed, and it was just an absolute bloodbath. Obviously, the Commanders are going to score more on the Lions defense than the Giants did that day against the Eagles defense. But I do kind of think, like, if there is a dog walking, this one to me feels like this is the game that could get out of hand.
It does. It feels a little bit to me like last year when Houston Houston beat Cleveland 34-10, just destroyed them. Or was it? I can't remember if that was the score of the Baltimore game. Regardless, Houston beat Cleveland, and then they went to Baltimore, and it was a double-digit spread. And I remember the discussion was, oh, disrespect. This is outrageous. I'm like, well, guess I'm betting the Baltimore Ravens, and they destroyed them. So,
see, I guess though, this is the logic that's killing me. Does this mean we need to be on the Chiefs? Because
need
I really
to be on the Chiefs,
right? Because like it's kind of the same thing. It's like when we're talking about this line was just 3 points. What was it? 3 weeks ago? 4 weeks ago? And now it's 8.5. And you're sitting there going, but at the same time, it's like, man, asking the Chiefs to cover a double digit number is a exercise in futility, or is two score game. Sorry.
Yeah, it's painful, no doubt.
45-14 last year for the Texans against Cleveland, and then they got beat 34-10.
Okay, that's what it was. Okay.
Because I was like, I think they got in the 40s. I guess, though, this is the real question. If a real dog is barking, who do you think is the most vulnerable favorite?
I think it's Philly. Because you've got a Super Bowl winning quarterback. You've got a Super Bowl winning coach. You've got the edge in coaching with McVay versus Sirianni. I mean, once again, are we excluding Buffalo Baltimore from this question?
Yes.
Because, like, obviously Buffalo...
That, for all intents and purposes, that game's a pick'em. I mean, right. You know what I mean? Like,
so
yes.
of the three, I know it seems square, as you pointed out, you know, when with the poll that I put out there, but I think it is the Rams because they played really well on Monday night against the Vikings. Maybe it's a little recency bias because the Eagles did not play exceptionally well. They looked
on offense. I think their defense came to play.
But they don't have N'Kobe Dean now.
Yep, that's fair.
Which is going to be an issue. Right now, with how they're playing, and I'm a Jalen Hurts guy, but Matthew Stafford, man, he looked like he turned back the clock on Monday night.
McVay's also, the Rams as road playoffs underdogs are 4-1 under McVay. They're 3-2 straight up.
Like, as much as I'd love for Washington to go into Detroit and pull off the upset, and maybe I'm putting too much stock into the Week 18 performance from the defense of Detroit, and that looked maybe not as impressive after we saw the Rams defense play the way that they did against Sam Bradford. But if you're going to get a defensive performance like that, and Anzalone, that dude was a maniac on Sunday Night Football a couple weeks ago. I see some stops coming, and I don't see many stops for Washington's offense. I just don't see stops coming for Washington's defense against Detroit in a dome. Like, his numbers, Jared Goff's numbers, are outrageous.
Well, and then the other thing is, while I think...
He's 34-13-1 against the spread indoors, Jared Goff is, as a Lion.
You know you're preaching to the choir. He's honestly, like, if you go look it up, he's one of the most profitable quarterbacks, like, of the last 10 years. It's insane. Yeah. Like, how good he is against summer. I was thinking about this. I don't know if you and I have talked about this. Is Dan Quinn perhaps underrated?
Yes.
Like, the Cowboys defense after he leaves, like, they weren't god-awful, but, you know, they clearly weren't what they were last year. When he left Seattle, the defense took a step back. Now, there's also some, like, questions of how much is that personnel. Like, Seattle was starting to get a little bit older. And Atlanta's not made the playoffs since he's left. I'm not saying that he was unjustifiably fired because, you know, at the end, like, I think he had back-to-back losing seasons. But I almost feel like because he was the head coach of the 28-3 comeback, we just decided that, like, he can't coach. But in reality, it's like, I don't know, when you kind of start to look at his record, you realize, like, the guy's pretty underrated. And then where I also think he's really good at is, you know, when the Shanahan tree got blown up because they got fired in Washington, Kyle was like, I think Kyle wound up with the Browns and he's in the whole Johnny Manziel mess. And he's not, you know, it wasn't like he was at the, you know, peak of his star power, goes and gets him. He's brought Kingsbury back, and there's no denying that I think Kingsbury's done a really good job with Jaden Daniels this year. Like, I think he's a pretty good identifier of, like, other good coaches.
I think he is underrated, and, you know, it's funny thinking about when Washington hired him, and the discord out of the nation's capital was like, oh, consolation prize. We wanted Ben Johnson, and we got Dan Quinn, a former failed head coach. And I think, look, I don't know if Dan Quinn is a elite game planner, but I tell you one thing. I think just if you need solid, like, I know this sounds so stupid, but, like, leadership, leader of men, like, that dude clearly has got the respect of that team and that organization. And to your point, man, he went out. Defense is not great, But old Cliffy Kingsbury has done a pretty good job as the offensive coordinator. It helps that he has Jaden Daniels. That's totally fair, but I think he did a good job of bringing in a quality staff to get it going. Let me stop there.
Yeah. I was thinking about this. Do we have a prop of number of fourth down attempts in a game? Because these are got to be the league leaders, right?
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, Quinn they do have very. They're both very.
The Dans. The Dans love to go for it.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
But I guess that would be the question. It's like,
I'm looking forward to that game. That's the matchup I wanted. I wanted Washington Dallas, and it's not because I'm a quasi Washington fan. It's like I want Jaden Daniels.
You Detroit, not Dallas. We were talking. Yeah.
My bad. Yeah, Detroit and Washington. And it's because I want to see Jaden Daniels, one of the rising stars in this league. You were talking about quarterbacks on Tuesday. I wanted to see him in an environment like Detroit. Like Detroit, you and I love college football. Is that the most, well, that in Buffalo, like, is that the most college-esque atmosphere we'll get in the NFL? Like, assuming they win on Saturday night, and the NFC Championship game in Detroit, the atmosphere and the noise is going to be unreal.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Tim, but Arrowhead's really loud.
It gets cold, too.
Philly is an intimidating atmosphere, but it does feel... There's something about Buffalo and Detroit that feel more college intensity, whereas... I feel like even though I give, unlike who was the Ram today that said I don't like Eagles fans.
I'm not sure.
It was a defensive guy. Hang on, it was Jared Verse. Yeah, Jared Verse said I hate Eagles fans.
I hate you.
They're so annoying. Now is Jared? I know he played at the University of Buffalo. Is he from up there? Because that would make sense. Like if you grew up around Eagles fans, I can.
Oh. I went to college in Pennsylvania. It's miserable. He's from Dayton, Ohio, apparently, but he went to high school in Pennsylvania.
Okay, so it seems like I hate Eagles fans. They're so annoying. I hate Eagles fans. When I see that green and white, I hate it. I actually get upset. Like, I actually genuinely get hot. Listen, I find myself breaking my neck, nodding in agreement with Jared. You better play well, man, because that is a crowd that will let you hear it.
As we learned from some viral videos over the weekend.
That guy was fired, by the way.
Good. Deserved to be fired.
All right, now wow. Let's get to... I was thinking about this. If I'm putting it in a non-championship game category, I cannot remember a game that I feel like I've been waiting all week for that doesn't involve my team, that it's just a game I want to watch, like Ravens-Bills. And I know it's got the storylines galore, but I've never been the biggest narrative guy. I've always felt like that's for sports writers. And even though I've done sports writing, I don't consider myself a sports writer. I just think that this is... I enjoy watching two guys trying to get over the mountaintop, and they're doing it against each other. And they still, you still got the Chiefs looming on the horizon. But I just really find myself going like, this would be the easiest thing. If you could only watch one game this weekend, like there's no doubt I'm having to wait until Sunday afternoon to watch this. But I don't know how you feel about it because, growing up in DC, I imagine Commanders, Skins fans feel a certain way about Ravens fans, but this game to me is just like, I cannot wait to watch.
Well, I'll start with the second part first. You were envious of a professionally run franchise and how well it was run just less than an hour away. I mean, that's the way I took it. And then I lived in Baltimore and lived in that area, so I've got plenty of Raven fans in my life. I'm with you, man. I mean, I think everything. This game's got everything. This is an AFC championship game. I've been this excited for AFC championships, whether it was
right
early on Chiefs-Patriots, then Chiefs-Bills. But the fact that this is in Buffalo, and this is no knock in Baltimore, good atmosphere, it's not Buffalo. The fact that it's going to be, what, -3 with the wind chill, and you've got the MVP favorite in Lamar Jackson now because of the AP poll that came out earlier this week, or on, I guess that was late last week.
I think it was last Friday.
Yeah,
it was
last Friday.
The All-Pro teams, correct?
Yeah, All-Pro came out, and at the time, Josh Allen was the betting favorite to win MVP, but then it came out that 30 of the 50 first-place votes were for Lamar Jackson, and now Lamar Jackson's the betting favorite to win MVP. You've got a franchise in Buffalo. I don't know if you knew this. Never won a Super Bowl. Lost four in a row. I don't know if you heard that either. But they haven't been back to the Super Bowl since
there was only
nights.
One that they had a chance in.
Well, you know they were a favorite against Washington in 91, I believe.
Yeah, and I think what Kelly had like five, like they, I think they, what, they threw like, I feel like they threw 38 interceptions that game.
Once they got to the Cowboy games, it was over.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Giants game they should have won. Redskins game, I think they were the favorite, even though that is one of the best NFL teams in history, the 91 Redskins. And then the Cowboy games, they didn't really have much of a shot. But I just, this game has everything you can ask for. It's got weather. It's a rematch of a game that we saw earlier this year where Derrick Henry ran for what, 199 yards? Like, he was incredible in that game.
I mean, it set the tone. Like, he had the 90 yarder. McDermott had kind of a cowardly punt near midfield, and they got the ball, and I think he ran 90 on the first play. And that was week three or week four. I know Henry had played, but that was the moment that you realized, like, oh, this idea that he didn't have anything in the tank, like, you realize, like, we're in for a long year. And, like, that's kind of the other aspect of it. Because Saquon has been so amazing, it's kind of sucked the oxygen out of, Tim, I think Derrick Henry finished with, like, 1,700 yards, like, over 1,700 yards.
It's the year of the running back acquisition because Josh Jacobs was an enormous add for the Green Bay Packers, and he's completely overlooked because they've already been eliminated, and Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley have been so massive in their new spots. But you've also got the Todd Monken angle,
yep,
where last year, they ran the ball like 11 times against the Chiefs. And I think six of them were Lamar Jackson. I think they gave it to Gus Edwards three times in the loss to the Chiefs. That ain't going to happen again. You've got Taron Johnson, Matt Milano, Terrell Bernard, who did not play in the first. I mean, this, I'm with you, man. Like, I haven't been this excited for a divisional round game that doesn't include my team, but my team also hasn't been to the divisional round in 19 years.
Yeah.
In a long time. This game's got everything. It's the perfect time slot, right? It's the late Sunday afternoon game, 5:30 for you guys, 3:30 for me out here in Vegas. It's perfection. I'm so excited for it, and hopefully it lives up to the billing, and hopefully it's a close game because I took the Bills in a teaser.
All right, also on Monday, we will have a game that very much involves Tim's team, Notre Dame. The Fighting Irish will take on Ohio State. Let's talk about that with Blake Topmeyer when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Blake Tuttmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. He's also the host of SEC Football Unfiltered. Episodes available each and every week, available on all major podcast platforms. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at BTopMeyer. Blake, I presume when you moved to Florida, you were trying to escape snow. Is it headed your way?
There is a chance for it in the forecast, yes.
I mean, I guess you're prepared probably. Oh, of course, who knows? I feel like half the people that are living in Florida are from cold weather places anyway, but not so much the panhandle. But I feel like you're probably more prepared for it than anyone else.
Well, although I did get rid of my snow shovel, I think, before we moved here. So I don't think it's going to be enough that I would need the shovel. Just let the sun do its work within 24 hours. But you know what's going to be interesting is I saw they were projecting it maybe Sunday night, Monday night, which I'll be gone for the national championship. So although I don't like the cold weather, I don't like the cold weather. I would be kind of sad if we get a rare snow here in the Panhandle and I were to miss it.
All right, I want to get to a couple of playoff things as well as the national title game. But you were there at AT&T Stadium during the Cotton Bowl Classic. When you saw the toss sweep on second and goal from the one, what was your reaction?
I mean, I hated it. And I know it's like, it's always so easy to play the, the hindsight game and those scenarios when the play doesn't work. But I just, and maybe this is a conservative way of thinking of things, but I think like, if you quarterback sneak it there, if you run it between the tackles there, the shy of a fumble, which could have also happened on a toss sweep, you run it between the tackles, the worst thing that happens is you go nowhere and you get two more shots at it from the 1 yard line. You go toss sweep to the perimeter with the running back who's not even your speed running back. Trey Wisner is not the speed guy that in Texas backfield, so I don't even know why they ran it to him if they were going to run that play. But worst case scenario, you run that toss sweep, you lose 7 yards like they did, and you turn needing 3 feet into third and eight. And so, it was a classic definition of a high risk, high reward play. I didn't think the situation called for it. Like, sometimes you got no choice but to go with the high risk, high reward play. But when you got four cracks at it from the 1 yard line, now granted that was second down, they'd already burned one crack at it. But I just didn't think In that moment, they needed a toss sweep to the boundary.
Yeah, one of my really good friends was a really good offensive lineman on our high school team. And he's like, when y'all would signal in a play, if we were at the one and y'all would signal in a play that was like, you know, outside zone, inside zone, because we would literally just ignore it. We'd say quarterback sneak. If we didn't get it, we'd just run it again.
Yeah. Yeah. And like,
and by the way, now you can push the quarterback.
Right. And I realize, like, it's a couple things here. Like, Quinn Ewers is not your running quarterback. Even on the sneak, like, I don't know how much they want Quinn Ewers running the quarterback sneak. And so, do you want to put your backup in that situation? But Arch has come in, and he's gone under center at different times in the Arch package. Now, what I wonder is...
I wondered if he was concussed.
Well, I didn't so much wonder that, but maybe that's possible. But the other thing I wondered is, so Sark put Arch in for that fourth down play where they moved the chains earlier in the game.
Yeah.
And Arch nearly fumbled. He was down just before he fumbled there. And I wonder if the fact that the ball came loose on that play, it didn't matter because he was, you know, video review confirmed that he was down. But just even seeing that happen, seeing the ball come out of Arch's hands for a near fumble, I wonder, as a coach, does that make you a little gun shy and think,
well,
do we want to go to the backup here when he almost fumbled last time?
And don't forget, in the Clemson game, remember when they were trying to salt it away? They had Arch in with, you know, it looked like they were trying to run like some kind of gimmick under center play, but he fumbled the sound. I don't even know if he fumbled it or if it didn't get back to him. But like they didn't even execute it. Like in kind of a same type situation.
Right, and so you wonder if kind of the horrors of those past moments with Arch in it made him not go to Arch in that scenario. But even if you don't put Arch in, I just think there's a number of options that are smarter than, like I said, the toss sweep to your slower of the two running backs in that scenario. I mean, I know there's this theory that, like, you weren't going to run it through the teeth of Ohio State's defense, but I don't know, four cracks from 1 yard out, like, it just takes one, right? And they removed that from the equation when they lost 7 yards on the toss sweep. I mean, at that point, you've got two pass plays into the end zone. You're taking the run out of it in that situation. So, I mean, I also kind of would have liked, I mean, it's predictable, but it's hard to defend. I kind of would have liked Arch in the game, spread the field, quarterback draw. I love spreading out in QB draw in those scenarios. And again, if it doesn't work, you're still in a short yarded situation for two more plays to go. So, yeah, I don't want to boil it down to one play, but I did think, like, in the aftermath of the game, that play, that 7 yard loss on second down, it really got overlooked, I thought, because of what happened on fourth down, the strip sack from Jack Sawyer, the scoop and score. But I really thought that whole scenario down there changed on second down.
That and the screen pass. Like, I can make a case, I think, like time, like all things considered, that's one of the worst defensive plays I've ever seen. You let a screen pass go 75 after you've just worked the entire half to get that thing even.
You know, we all love those moments where 10 seconds before the play, we correctly predict what's going to happen. Oh, yeah. We look like a genius. But I didn't feel like a genius for this one because, I mean, I said, here comes the screen pass like 10 seconds before the snap. But, like, it didn't require a genius to know the screen pass was coming. I feel like any football novice in the building realized screen pass is coming here. Like, that's what any offensive coordinator is considering in that scenario, is something safe, something to see if you can rip off some yards and get more aggressive. But nonetheless, Texas was duped for it. I mean, if you look at the replay of that play, Texas kept its Ohio State kept its two offensive tackles in to provide just the slightest bit of resistance, while its three interior linemen kind of leaked forward. And yet Texas had four guys barreling in at Will Howard. So, you know, at that point, you're giving Ohio State the opportunity to kind of seal off every defender, you know, with three guys with four guys barreling in at Will Howard. And that's exactly what happened. Texas had the numbers, Ohio State had the numbers. You know, Texas wasn't in the right lanes, and it just turned into an absolute disaster for Texas when, like I said, I think any football novice in the building knew that there was a very, very good chance a screen pass was coming right there.
Blake Topmeyer joining us here on the program. So, Blake, since you were there watching that, and Texas, if you look at the score, it was 28-14, but I think most of us agree that was, you know, a play call away from being a tie ball game. Does it give you optimism if you're looking at Notre Dame that they can make this competitive? Or as you dive into it, does it look like a bad matchup for Notre Dame going up against Ohio State?
Yeah, I don't think there's very many great matchups against Ohio State. Like, when Ohio State plays really well, I don't know that anybody can beat them. Yeah, I think what Texas did on defense should provide a little bit of optimism for Ohio State, for Notre Dame to keep it close anyway. I mean, I think Texas' defense sort of lived up to its reputation. I thought that was one of the best defenses in college football, really for most of the season. It looked the part in the Cotton Bowl. Yeah, Ohio State scored 28 points, but seven of those came from its defense. So, this is the type of game that I think Notre Dame could keep Ohio State in the 20s, maybe, but I just question how many is Notre Dame going to score? You know, Ohio State's defense has been rock solid all season. Like, that's been a unit that's been overlooked a little bit, I feel like, because Ohio State lost to Michigan, but they didn't lose to Michigan because of their defense. I mean, Oregon is the only team this season that scored more than 17 points on Ohio State. The only team that scored more than 17 points. And Notre Dame, as we know, is kind of limited offensively. So, yeah, I mean, I think it could be competitive, at least, you know, going into the second half. I think Notre Dame can, like I said, keep Ohio State in the 20s, but I don't know that Notre Dame can get out of the teens if it even gets to that many.
All right, we've got one game left. We've now got we know how this thing is going to work. After 1 year, what's your review of the playoff?
I loved it. I'm probably in the minority that wants zero changes to this format. I am not one that wants them to seed based off the ranking. And I think I think that became the easy opinion this year, and Reese Davis used the weekly ESPN playoff show as like his personal pulpit to demand that they seed based off ranking. But I think that would be a knee-jerk reaction, and I don't think it's good for the playoff. I mean, you know, one of the reasons why everybody thought we should seed based off ranking was Arizona State. You know, why is Arizona State getting the bye? Well, now as we look at it, I would argue that Arizona State performed much closer to a 4 seed than it did to a 12 seed, which is what Arizona State would have been seeded. They would have been seeded 12th if the seeding would have gone based off ranking. Now, I'm not saying Arizona State was the fourth best team in the playoff, but they performed closer to the 4 seed in that game against Texas than they did as looking like a 12 seed. And I do like that the fact that the byes being reserved for conference champions does preserve some additional value to the regular season. It preserves some value to those conference championship games. If you seed based off ranking, I think you're further watering down the SEC and Big Ten championship games. You're turning the ACC and Big 12 championship games into an opportunity to get a bye, as they are now, into an opportunity to, you know, maybe lose the first round of the playoff. And so, and the other thing it does is, I think it protects the byes for the conference champions. It protects against Notre Dame getting what would amount to a double bye, not having to play on conference championship weekend, and then getting a bye into the quarterfinals. They would be the only team really eligible for that. And additionally, it protects against like a third place team in a conference getting a bye. I mean, you could literally have that if we seed the teams based off the rankings. I'm not saying it would happen often or that it's incredibly likely, but you could have a possibility of three teams from the same conference getting a first round bye, in which case, you know, you'd have teams number one and two from that conference playing for the conference championship, while the third place team gets to sit out conference championship weekend but gets a bye into the quarterfinals. Like, to me, there's some flaws. And Boise State gets a bye this year, but I don't blame that on Boise State. I blame that on the ACC stinking this year. And so I do think it would be overreactionary to change, which seems to be the biggest gripe right now. And I'm kind of hammering home on that one because there aren't a lot of other huge gripes at this moment, I think, other than the seeding. I think the biggest flaw in the seeding this year had nothing to do with the buys, but it was that the committee gave Oregon such a hard draw by seeding Ohio State 8 when Ohio State should have been seeded 5th based on their resume and based on the way they performed throughout most of the season. And so if the committee would have done what they should have done and rewarded Ohio State's resume and given them the 5 seed, then I think, you know, we wouldn't even be having this conversation because Oregon wouldn't have drawn Ohio State in the quarterfinals.
That's kind of an interesting point you make because my follow-up to you was going to be, okay, I agree with largely what you said, but the only problem I see with this is you can wind up having the 1 seed not really be rewarded for, like, let's be clear, Oregon was not really rewarded for having clearly the best regular season and of anyone in college football. But it's interesting that you frame it that way. It's not the mechanics of the bracket. It was the way that it was seeded. That's an interesting distinction.
I mean, you could say that, like, changing the mechanics of the bracket would help a little bit, but it's not like Ohio State would have gotten a bye into the quarterfinals.
I think changing seeding only perhaps brings one benefit. I still think on opening weekend you're still going to have blowouts. Go watch Wild Card Weekend in the NFL. You know what I mean? Like, we saw a bunch of blowouts. That's what you're probably going to have. What I do think, if you change seeding, I think you give yourself a better opportunity to have more quarterfinal games that are competitive. But I will still acknowledge there's still probably going to be at least 2 quarterfinals that'll be blowouts.
Yeah, and you might increase the chance for first round blowouts. I don't know. Like, I think there's going to be blowouts in rounds 1 and a couple in the quarterfinals anyway. Although, you know, I mean, the quarterfinals started serving up some good games this year. I mean, even, you know, Boise State, Penn State wasn't a thriller, but that was a game into the second half.
Abdul Carter got hurt.
Good point. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing how Boise State started moving the football. Can't believe it.
That's a fair counter argument. But I mean, really, the one blowout was the true absolute blowout in the quarterfinals was the one that we all thought was going to be the best game, Oregon against Ohio State. Right, like that was the one that was over. But 20 minutes into the game,
it was over before it was on ESPN.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so, yeah, I think no matter what you do to the seeding, you're not going to avoid blowouts. And you hit the nail on the head. Like, I mean, there was like what, 1 good game in the NFL wild card round?
We had 2 games that were close on the scoreboard. 1 good game, like Philly Packers was at times close, but it was the Philly was always in control. But that was not a great football game. Commanders Bucks was a great football game.
You know, what's interesting is I think this huge demand for seeding based off ranking, so much of that would have went away if the ACC wouldn't have been so horrible this year, right? I mean, like...
And yeah, maybe, honestly, I would also throw this out there. Did we maybe underestimate the Big 12? Because I'm with you. Arizona State, that was a 4-5 game. Guess what? It went to double overtime. Like, to me, like that's kind of a 4-5 game. Like,
yep.
And maybe I think the bigger problem is, like, you know, like in the end, I think the reality was they never expected that a G5 team would wind up being in the bye scenario. But I'm with you. I think the ACC is stinking. And I think we underestimated the Big 12.
I totally agree with that. And I was saying, and I might have said it on this show, like when the playoff bracket came out, SMU getting in wasn't a hill I was going to die on. But I thought that was the one bid that I didn't think the committee got that one right. I didn't have an argument with Indiana because I didn't see better alternatives to 11-1 Indiana.
I'm going to deal in reality. An 11-1 Big Ten team's getting it.
That's reality. Every single time.
Yes.
But with SMU, I thought, like, what did they actually achieve? Not very much. And I thought the better choices were, A, Ole Miss. If you were going to take an SEC team, I thought Ole Miss was the clear option. I thought they were... I mean, they beat South Carolina head-to-head. They didn't just beat them. They beat them like a drum. And South Carolina also lost Alabama head-to-head. So to me, that removes South Carolina from the mix. And I thought Ole Miss's win against Georgia, the impressive fashion that it was, I thought if you win an SEC team, I thought it should have been Ole Miss. But the other team that nobody talked about that I thought should have been in the equation for that final at-large bid was BYU. 10-win BYU, which beat SMU on the road at SMU's house. They win 10 games, they beat SMU on the road, and nobody talked about BYU getting that final at-large bid. Again, it wasn't a hill I was going to die on because every resume for that final at-large spot was flawed. But it was interesting to me that there was like so much conversation around Miami because of Cam Ward, and it's the U and whatever. But it's like I thought BYU had a substantially better resume than what Miami did. And one of BYU's two losses was right at the end against Arizona State, a playoff qualifier. Now, granted, BYU rallied to make that game closer, but that game came down to the wire. And so I thought BYU was a team that got overlooked, in part because I agree with what you said. The committee, they disrespected the Big 12, I think, a little more than was right. They were a little too heavy-handed with the Big 12, and I think they favored the ACC, including Miami, kind of till the last minute, probably more than they should have. They liked the ACC a little too much, and they disliked the Big 12 a little too much.
All right, we'll wrap up here. I don't know how much you've been following it, but the news yesterday, the Department of Education announces that revenue sharing is going to be what Title IX will apply to revenue sharing. Now, most people that I trust that have legal backgrounds and understand college football, I think Bud Elliott said it best, and Bud's an attorney. Talk to me in 3 weeks.
Yes.
I do think, though, it will be fascinating even if it's not 50-50, if there is a bigger ratio than what is expected, I think this could throw the whole money thing completely into banana land. And on top of that, I think you've had a lot of players that have been recruited under promises, basically money that they don't have, but they think they're going to have with revenue sharing. Like, this could just...